The last crimson vestiges of sunset had faded from the western sky by the time Frank reached Montero Range. The stars were out, pinpricks of light against a sable backdrop, but the moon had not yet risen. Thick black shadows cloaked the landscape. He reined Goldie to a halt and listened intently, searching the night for gunfire or any other sounds that were out of place. He heard the distant noise of the drilling rigs, but that was all. Moving at a slower pace and letting the sounds guide him, Frank rode toward the wells. He didn't know if he would find Magnuson at one of the rigs or if the oil man had gone back to the rented mansion in Los Angeles. Either way, he intended to warn the drillers that they might be in for trouble tonight. Frank figured he was still a half a mile or so from the cluster of wells where the battle had taken place earlier in the day when he heard a sudden flurry of shots. He wasn't given to profanity, but he bit back a curse now. The hired killers had had too big a lead. They had gotten here first and launched their attack, just as he had suspected they would. Frank heeled Goldie into a run now that he knew where hell was a-popping tonight. He pulled his rifle from the saddle boot as he leaned forward in the leather. As Goldie pounded around a curve in the trail, Frank spotted spurts of muzzle flame in the darkness up ahead. He pulled the stallion to a stop long enough to study the situation for a moment, trying to trace the movements of the outlaws by following the muzzle flashes from their guns. It appeared that the gang had the wells, the sheds, and the oil storage tank surrounded. They were riding around the place like Indians ringing a circled wagon train, back in those savage days that didn't seem all that long ago to Frank. Their marksmanship couldn't be that accurate, though, not with their firing from the backs of running horses in bad light. They were just trying to keep the drillers pinned down, Frank realized, while they worked their way close enough to do something else. Frank didn't know what that something else might be, but he was sure of one thing. It wouldn't be anything good.
Wolf, stay!
He didn't want the big cur following him where he was going, right into that storm of lead. There was too great a chance that Wolf would get hit by a stray bullet. Goldie would have to run the risk of that, as would Frank himself, because there was no way he could reach the wells otherwise. He didn't know if one more defender would make a difference, but he intended to find out. He wanted to know if Magnuson was there too. And on the way in, he would do as much damage to the gang as he could. As he rode closer, he picked out the muzzle flashes that came from the sheds and the derricks as the drillers tried to defend themselves. They were outnumbered and outgunned, though, and despite being bruisers who could handle themselves just fine in any sort of hand-to-hand brawl, they probably weren't any match for the deadly skill of gun wolves like the men they faced tonight. The Drifter was, though. This sort of fight was his meat. Guiding Goldie with his knees, Frank charged into the fight. He snapped the Winchester to his shoulder and began firing as fast as he could work to repeat his lever. A couple of shadow figures cried out in pain, threw up their arms, and toppled from the backs of their galloping horses as Frank raced by. It didn't take long for some of the gunmen to realize what was going on.
They got reinforcements coming in! Get those sons of bitches!
One man hardly qualified as reinforcements, Frank thought. But he was firing so fast that the outlaws might think there were three or four of them.
Yeah.
Colt flame whipped out from the gun muzzles as the men turned their fire on him. But Frank bent low in the saddle to make himself a smaller target, and Goldie leaped forward with blinding speed. They broke through the ring of killers and thundered toward the wells. Now there was another problem for Frank to worry about. The defenders might easily take him for one of the bushwhackers and turn their guns on him.
Hold your fire! It's Morgan! Hold your fire!
A bullet whistled past his head, and this one came from one of the derricks. Several more slugs screamed through the air around him before he heard Victor Magnuson's order.
Damn it, cease fire! That's Morgan!
Grateful, now he only had 20 or more hard cases and wanted to fill his hide full of lead instead of the outlaws and the drillers. Frank rode around one of the sheds and dropped from the saddle. He slapped Goldie on the rump and sent the stallion racing off into the night. Goldie would get himself out of harm's way, but stay close enough to hear Frank's whistle when he was summoned. Frank dropped to one knee, lifted the Winchester, and drew a bead on one of the racing gunmen. The sound of heavy footsteps beside him made Frank twist around and swing the Winchester toward a potential new threat. But it was Magnuson who had run over to him.
Don't shoot, Morgan, it's me!
Figured you'd have gone back to town.
I wanted to know if you'd found anything. I thought you might come back by here this evening. And those bastards came out of nowhere and started shooting at us.
Not nowhere. I found their hideout.
They're not Montero men?
Not hardly.
Then who do they work for?
I don't know yet. And this isn't exactly a good time to be trying to figure it out. I think they want to do more than just ride around and take pot shots at us, though.
What do you think they have in mind?
Dunno, but I reckon we'll find out if we live long enough. How many men do you have here?
There were 16 men in the crew before the two were killed this morning. I sent one man back to town with their bodies in a wagon, so that leaves 13. I don't know if any of them have been killed yet tonight.
How many horses?
None but mine. I told you, I sent the wagon back to town. The crew's come and go in it, not on horseback. Anyway, I'm not going to cut and run if that's what you're thinking, Morgan. These are my men and my wells, and by God, I'm not going to abandon them.
I was thinking more of trying to get a rider out to go for help to the Montero Ranch.
I'd be glad for somebody to use my horse, but it won't be me. I doubt if anybody from the Montero place would come to help us anyway, even with that so-called spruce in place.
Frank wasn't so sure about that, but a second later, he realized that they didn't have time to send a rider for help. He spotted a sudden flare of light in the darkness, about 100 yards away. It wasn't a muzzle flash this time. It burned steadily and grew brighter, and he realized after a moment that it was the leaping flame of a torch. And it was soon followed by several other torches.
Magnuson, I reckon that big wooden tank's got oil in it, doesn't it?
What? Of course it does. All three of those wells have come in and are steady producers. You store the oil there until it can be put in barrels and taken to the refinery. The tank's at least half full, maybe more.
It'd probably be a good idea then if we kept those hombres away from it.
Son of a bitch! Stop them! Shoot them!
The men carrying the torches were being covered, though, by the continued gunfire by the circling marauders. The drillers tried to shoot at them, only to be forced to dive back behind cover by a hail of lead. Frank dared that fusillade, and so did Magnuson. Both men stepped out into the open and leveled their rifles. Frank emptied the Winchester. He dropped the empty rifle and drew his Colt, began running forward to cut the range as he fired. Magnuson was beside him, also using a handgun now. A couple of the torches went spinning through the air as the men holding them toppled from their saddles. The torches fell harmlessly to the ground and went out, well short of the oil storage tank. That left one man, though, and he had almost reached the tank. He was close enough, in fact, that Frank could see him by the light of the torch as the man stood up in his stirrups, flung the burning brand high in the air, and yanked his mount around and rode hell-bent for leather away from him. The torch dropped out of sight behind the circular wooden walls of the tank, and the world exploded. The concussive roar of the explosion slammed into Frank, knocking him off his feet. He rolled over and snatched his hat from the ground where it had fallen. As he surged to his feet, he flung up his arm to shield his face as much as he could from the terrible heat of the fire. As he staggered away from the searing assault, Frank looked around for Magnuson. He spotted the oil man lying huddled on the ground a few yards away. Frank clapped his hat on and hurried over to Magnuson's side. He realized that he still clutched his Colt in his right hand. The gun wouldn't do any good against the roaring fire, so he holstered it. Then he bent and got both hands under Magnuson's arms and hauled him to his feet. Magnuson shook his head groggily, the first sign Frank had seen that the man was even still alive. He would have fallen, though, without Frank's strong grip holding him up. Frank put his mouth close to Magnuson's ear.
We gotta get out of here.
He knew that's what he was saying, but he couldn't hear the words, even though he was the one who spoke them. He was deaf, he realized, and the roaring he heard wasn't from the fire. It was inside his own head. Gripping Magnuson's shoulder, he shook the oil. Magnuson's eyes began to focus again. He stood straight, and Frank let go of him. The explosion had probably deafened Magnuson, too. Frank gestured instead of yelling, indicating with his hands that they needed to get away from the blazing storage tank. The tank wasn't the only thing that was on fire, Frank saw as he glanced around. Burning oil had been thrown all over the area by the blast. The sheds were burning, and so was one of the derricks. That well went up suddenly as well. Frank felt it more than heard it, a massive thump that shook the ground under his feet and staggered him and Magnuson. A column of flame 100 feet high shot into the air, followed by billowing clouds of black smoke. The smoke rolled across the ground, choking the men who were caught in it. Frank gripped Magnuson's arm and stumbled blindly forward. The smoke would kill them if they didn't get clear of it, but they also ran the risk of getting caught in the rapidly spreading flames. The other oil wells were liable to explode at any minute, too. The odds of anyone coming out of this holocaust alive kept climbing. Added to that was the fact that the hard cases who had attacked the wells in the first place were still shooting into the conflagration. Frank couldn't see the muzzle flashes because of the smoke, or hear the blast because he was still deaf from the explosion. but a couple of times he felt the lash of a slug through the air near his head. He and Magnuson abruptly burst out into a clearing in the smoke that had been formed as the billowing clouds eddied around. Frank's eyes were stinging and watering so much he still couldn't see very well. He blinked and looked around as best he could. The sky was a bizarre orange-red dome, lit by the hellish blaze. Frank spotted a couple of men on horseback galloping toward him and Magnuson. More flames spurted from the muzzles of their guns as they opened fire. Frank brought his Colt up and blew the sons of bitches out of their saddles. That emptied Frank's gun, though, and there was no time now to reload.
Come on!
Frank was surprised to realize that he actually heard the words this time, though they were still faint. He lunged toward the horses the killers had been riding and grabbed the dangling reins of one of them. Hauling the spooked animal's head down, Frank brought it under control and then shoved the reins into Magnuson's hands.
Yo! Get out of here!
What about my men? What about my men?
There's nothing you can do for them now. They'll either make it out or they won't.
Magnuson hesitated, but only for a second. He grabbed the horn and swung up into the saddle. He waited, though, until Frank had caught the other horse's reins before he spurred away through the smoke. Frank was right behind him, thundering through the black, choking clouds. The heat in the air seemed to sear his nose and throat and lungs. He bent forward over the horse's neck and held his hat down with one hand as he rode. It would have been nice to be able to see what he was riding into, but that was impossible. The smoke had closed in again, and Frank was as blind as if someone had wrapped a thick woolen blanket around his head. Just about as hot and half suffocated, too. Another massive explosion came from somewhere behind him. That would be the third well detonating. This oil field of Magnuson's was ruined, Frank thought. There was no telling how long the wells would continue to burn, either. He had no idea how anybody would even go about extinguishing such a terrible blaze. Suddenly, he emerged from the smoke again. Blessedly clear air filled his lungs. Frank looked around for Magnuson or some of the drillers, eager to see if anyone else had escaped. Instead of the oil man, Frank saw a group of riders about 20 yards away. They spotted Frank and hauled their mounts around to charge toward him. His Colt was empty, but he saw the front of a Winchester sticking up from a saddle, strapped to the horse he had borrowed from one of the dead outlaws. He grabbed the rifle and jerked it from the boot. He worked the lever, aimed at the hard cases attacking him, and squeezed the trigger. One of the gunmen slewed halfway around in his saddle and then slipped off his horse's back completely, crashing to the ground. Even before that man hit the dirt, Frank had cranked another round into the rifle's firing chamber and drew another bead. That was enough for the gunmen. They peeled away, obviously unwilling to face any more of Frank's deadly accurate fire. That was a stroke of luck, because when Frank tried to send a round after them to hurry them on their way, the Winchester's hammer clicked on empty. Frank jammed the rifle back in the saddle boot and reached to the loops on his shell belt for fresh cartridges, which he quickly thumbed into the Colt's cylinder. When he had a full wheel, he holstered the gun and started looking for Magnuson again. His ears were still ringing a little, but most of his hearing had come back. Frank found Magnuson in some trees across the road from where the wells had been. Magnuson lifted the reins and started to pull his horse away.
Hold on, Magnuson. It's me, Morgan.
Morgan! You made it out of that hell alive?
Appears so. Are you hurt?
Well, I'll be coughing up smoke for a month. That's all. We're both damn lucky. You can call it lucky to have thousands of dollars worth of oil go up in smoke.
Well, you're still drawing breath, even if it hurts. I'd call that lucky, considering.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Have you seen any more of those gunmen around?
No, but I heard shooting a minute ago. Was that you?
I ran into a few of them right after I got out of the smoke and swapped a little lead with them. They lit a shuck after I dropped a couple of them.
I wish you'd killed all the bastards. They may not have ruined me tonight, but they've come damn close. Are you sure that bunch from the Montero Ranch didn't have anything to do with this?
Positive.
Well, I'm sure Dolores Montero will be glad to hear about what's happened tonight anyway, whether it was her doing or not.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. She just wants to be left alone to keep the ranch running the way her husband intended.
She's not going to be able to do that. Everybody knows there's oil down there. If I'm not the one who goes and gets it, somebody else will.
Frank knew that Magnuson was right. The same thing had happened during the gold rushes here in California back in 49 and in the Black Hills of Dakota Territory in 76. And now it was happening all over again here in Southern California. Only it was black gold now that everyone saw. It didn't have to be accompanied by violence, though. Magnuson and Dolores Montero would work out some sort of arrangement that would be tolerable to both of them if Frank had to sit them down at a table at gunpoint and force them to negotiate. That would have to come later, though. Right now, the first step was to see if there were any survivors besides him and Magnuson. The smoke was beginning to clear somewhat, although the flames still leaped high above the destroyed wells and storage tank. Frank couldn't even see the sheds anymore. They had burned to the ground. All three derricks still stood, although they were aflame. As Frank and Magnuson watched, one of them collapsed in a shower of burning beams, sending a renewed burst of flames and sparks high in the air. The other two derricks followed suit a moment later, prompting Magnuson to shake his head sadly.
Mr. Magnuson! Mr. Magnuson!
Frank and Magnuson turned their horses in that direction and saw half a dozen men hurrying toward them. A couple of the men limped, and one had to be helped along by his companions. Frank recognized Rattigan as the men came up. He was glad to see that some of the drillers had made it out of that inferno.
Rattigan, are you the only ones left?
As far as we know, Mr. Magnuson, I don't reckon the other fellas made it.
God, seven men dead, and that doesn't even count the ones who were killed earlier. Somebody's gonna pay for this.
You can bet a hat on it, Magnuson.
$5,000 if you kill the man responsible for this, Morgan.
You don't have to put a bounty on his head. I'll see to it that justice catches up to him anyway.
Well, you just remember what I said if it means anything to you.
Frank just jerked his head in a curt nod, then hipped around in the saddle as he heard approaching horses.
Are they coming back to try to wipe us out for good?
Don't know, but I reckon we'll find out in a minute or two.
Fortunately, as a group of a dozen riders came into view moving fast up the road toward the wells, Frank recognized Pete Linderman in the lead. The Salida del Sol foreman was backed by some of the Montero punchers. The newcomers were bristling with guns, so they looked plenty threatening. But as Linderman spotted Frank, Magnuson, and the drillers, he held up a hand to slow his companions. They jogged on up to the group that had escaped from the fire and reined in.
Good Lord! Even from the ranch house, it looked like the whole world was on fire over here, and that's just about right. I never saw such a thing in all my life. I'd just as soon never see it again.
You and me both, Linderman. You and me both.
What did you do? Accidentally set the whole shebang ablaze?
There's nothing accidental about it. The hombres who bushwhacked both sides earlier today came back and did this.
We thought we heard some shooting before all hell broke loose.
They were trying to wipe me out. They'll find out I don't give up so easy.
Reckon I can vouch for that. Are you hurt, Morgan?
Just a little ringing in my ears from the explosion, that's all. But Magnuson lost another seven men, looks like.
I'm sorry to hear that, Magnuson. Why don't you and your men come on back to the ranch with us? You can get cleaned up and patch up your wounded.
I don't think so. Morgan's convinced that Senora Montero didn't have anything to do with this, but I'm not so sure.
Go ahead and be a damn fool if you want to, mister. That's up to you. We were just trying to help.
How about if you send a wagon over here? That way Magnuson's men can get back to town.
I reckon we can do that.
Well, I'm obliged to you for any help you can give us.
Couple of you men, ride back to the ranch and fetch a wagon.
Okay, Pete.
Did you manage to account for any of the varmints who did this?
We downed some of them. Let's have a look around and see if we can find any of the bodies.
Magnuson rode with them. The rest of the ranch hands and the surviving drillers stayed where they were, eyeing each other warily. None of them were ready to completely trust their former enemies. Frank headed for the spot where he had shot two men out of the saddle. He was sure that both hombres had been either dead or badly wounded. They hadn't gotten up and walked off on their own. But they were gone, nonetheless.
The rest of the bunch took the bodies with them. They're being mighty careful. They must be under orders not to leave anything behind that might let them be traced back to the man who hired them.
Who do you reckon that might be, Morgan? We've spent so long thinking it was Magnuson here who was putting the burrs under our saddle. It's hard to figure on anybody else being to blame.
Well, you know better now. If you're not responsible for this devastation, then it's obvious that there's a third party involved.
I don't know yet who's to blame. I got a few folks I'm wondering about, but no real proof to point to any of them yet.
When you figure it out, let us know. The law won't do anything about it. I reckon the boys and me would be glad to form an unofficial posse and lend you a hand, Morgan.
I'll keep that in mind. We won't take the law into our own hands, though, unless we have to.
The three men rode around the area some more, just to make sure that none of the raiders who had been killed had been left behind. Their companions had been thorough, though. Even the horses the dead men had been riding were gone, except for the two Frank and Magnuson had used to escape from the blaze. looking for the outlaws' mounts, reminded Frank of Goldie and Wolf. He called for them, and sure enough, the stallion and the big cur came loping up a few moments later. Magnuson cast an unfriendly glance toward Wolf, but didn't say anything. Frank dismounted and handed the reins of the horse he'd been riding to Linderman.
That horse belonged to one of the varmints, and so did the one Magnuson's riding. The brands probably won't tell us anything, but it might be a good idea to hang on to them anyway, just in case.
We can go through the saddlebags, too. But like you said, it probably won't do any good. Those hombres are too smart to have left anything incriminating in them.
What are your plans now, Morgan?
Can't track those killers at night. I reckon I'll go back to the hotel and try to get some rest.
Why don't you come to the ranch with us? It's closer than town, and I'm sure the Senora would be willing to put you up for the night.
Morgan works for me now.
I know that. And up until today, I reckon it would have been plenty of reason to be plumb inhospitable to him. But things are changing here in the valley, at least a little. Not that we'll ever welcome those smelly, noisy contraptions of yours, Magnuson. But you're welcome to come to the ranch, too. You look like you've been put through the ringer.
I have to get back to town. My sister will worry about me if I don't show up at all tonight. I'll just stay with my men until your men get back with that wagon.
Shouldn't be too much longer. We'll wait, too. Anything we can do to help with those blazes?
Now just see they don't spread to the rest of your range. They'll have to burn themselves out.
How long will that take?
There's no way of knowing. The fire where the storage tank was will go out as soon as all the oil that was in there is burned up. The well fires will probably die down some overnight, but it'll be days, maybe even weeks, before they die out entirely.
You mean we'll maybe have to keep an eye on those fires for weeks?
That's right.
One more reason we don't want any more of those damned wells on Montero Range.
I'm too tired to get into this right now, Linderman. Anyway, it's not up to you, is it? Senora Montero makes the important decisions on Salida del Sol, doesn't she? And she probably wouldn't like it if she knew you'd invited me to spend the night there.
I stand by what I said. If the Senora don't like it, that's between her and me.
Doesn't matter. Like I told you, I'm staying right here with my men until that wagon comes to take them back to town. And then I'm going with them.
Well, it shouldn't be much longer now.
As the minutes passed, Magnuson and Linderman waited with their men by what was left of the oil field.
Shouldn't your men have been here with that wagon?
Hold your horses. I'm sure it took them a little while to get a team hitched up. You can't move all that fast in a wagon, even an empty one. They'll be along directly.
But as the minutes dragged by, Linderman began to frown worriedly. Frank understood the feeling. He thought the wagon should have arrived already from the ranch headquarters, too. The surviving drillers had sat down on the ground to rest, with their shoulders slumped in exhaustion. Several of the Montero punchers looked at each other, then dismounted and walked over to the drillers. One of them reached for the tobacco pouch in his breast pocket.
You want to borrow the makings?
Don't mind if I do. Thanks.
Welcome. Pass it around to the rest of you fellas if you want.
That was a good start toward mending the fences between those two bunches, Frank thought. He was glad to see it, but it didn't ease his worry about the wagon. That worry got a lot worse in a hurry when the sound of distant shots came drifting through the night air.
That sounds like it's coming from the ranch. Son of a bitch, we gotta go see what that's about.
I'm coming with you.
I'm not leaving my men. This could be some sort of trick.
Nobody asked you to.
Linderman pulled his horse's head around and spurred the animal into a run. Frank was right beside him, and the other punchers from Salida del Sol hurriedly mounted up and galloped after them. Linderman probably knew this range like the back of his hand, Frank thought, so he let the foreman take the lead. The shooting had stopped by the time the group of hard-riding men approached the ranch headquarters. An orange glow, similar to the one that had lit up the sky above the burning oil wells, but smaller, could be seen up ahead.
Something's on fire, damn it! Looks like one of the barns!
That was what it was, all right, Frank saw a moment later. Flames leaped from the roof of the big structure. Men ran around it, flinging buckets of water onto the blaze without much noticeable effect. They could probably keep the fire from spreading that way, but they wouldn't be able to save the barn. Linderman flung himself out of the saddle before his mount stopped moving and grabbed one of the ranch hands as the man went by with a bucket of water.
What the hell happened here?
It was some of those damn drillers. They snuck in and set the barn on fire, then started shooting at us when we come a-running out of the bunkhouse.
Are you sure about that? You know it was Magnuson's men?
We got a good look at them, dammit. They sure as hell weren't cowboys. A couple of the fellas who went with you rode back in just as hell started popping, Pete, and they got gunned down right away. That ain't the worst of it. Some of them got in the house.
The Senora!
They took her, Pete. Carried her out of the house kicking and screaming, threw her on a horse with one of the bastards and rode off into the night with her.
Was she hurt?
Not so as you can see. Like I said, she was fighting like a wildcat.
Well, damn it, didn't you try to stop them?
Of course we tried. Run right into a hail of lead from those scallyhooters, though. There's two boys are laying dead in the bunkhouse right now from trying to stop them.
Sorry. I know you wouldn't just let anybody take the Senora without putting up a fight. I just can't believe those blasted drillers would do such a thing.
They didn't.
You heard what Sammy told us. They saw the drillers.
Yeah, and they was mighty hard to miss in them oily clothes.
You saw men dressed like drillers. I'd bet a hat they were really the same men who set fire to Magnuson's wells earlier tonight.
Yeah, I reckon it could have been at that.
Don't listen to this no-account gunfighter, Pete. You heard him say yourself that he's working for Magnuson now. Of course he's gonna claim Magnuson didn't have nothing to do with kidnapping Senora Montero.
I don't know. Somebody blew the hell out of three of Magnuson's wells tonight, as well as a big storage tank full of oil, and it wasn't us. I think Morgan's right. Somebody else is trying to keep trouble stirred up between us and those drillers. What do they hope to gain by carrying off the Senora?
They don't know that we're onto them. They think each side is still blaming the other for what's going on. That's why they were dressed like cowboys when they attacked Magnuson's wells, and that explains why they changed into drillers' outfits before raiding the ranch.
I reckon that makes sense. They figured by kidnapping the Senora, it'd finally push us into trying to wipe out Magnuson's bunch once and for all.
No, what they really want is for both sides to wipe each other out. That's what they've been after all along.
With Magnuson and the Senora both out of the way, somebody could come in here and grab up the best ranch and the biggest oil drilling operation in the valley.
That's the way it looks to me.
Then they're gonna kill Dolores.
They won't hurt her, at least not right away. They're smart enough to know that they may need her for leverage. Anyway, if their plan is to blame Magnuson for the kidnapping, you're liable to get a phony ransom note with some clues pointed back to him, just to cinch the deal.
But if they realize that you figure out what's going on, they're liable to get rid of her just so she can't ever testify against them.
That could happen, all right. That's why I gotta get her away from them as quick as I can.
You mean why we have to go after her?
This is a one-man job, Pete. And since I'm the one who's got a pretty good idea where they took her, it looks like I'm elected.
Sammy, go throw that water on the fire. You know where their hideout is, don't you?
Yeah, I trailed them there earlier today. Or rather, Wolf did. I probably couldn't have done it without that educated nose of his.
Damn it! Tell me where it is. I'll get every man on the ranch, and we'll ride in there and wipe those bastards out.
That's the last thing you need to be thinking about doing. For one thing, you'd lose at least half your men getting into that hideout. And for another, the first thing those varmints would do if you attacked the place is kill Senora Montero. You don't want that.
No, I sure as hell don't. You can't be serious about going in after her by yourself.
Sometimes a job is cut out more for one man than an army. This is one of those times.
What about two men?
Meaning you and me?
Damn straight.
Well, two men might be able to get in where they'll be taking the Senora. I'm not sure it'd be a good idea to tell the crew where we're going, though. They might not be able to resist the temptation to come after us.
And that could ruin everything if the situation's as dangerous as you make it out to be, Morgan. I don't like the idea of nobody else knowing where the hideout is, though. What if you and I don't come back?
That's a good point. If you got a man you can trust, I'll write down the directions and seal them up, with orders that the note should be turned over to Stafford if you and I don't come back by tomorrow morning. If we're not back by then, it'll probably be too late for Senora Montero anyway. So the sheriff can take a posse in and clean out that rat's nest.
And if the sheriff won't do it, I know a bunch of cowpunchers tough as wang leather who will. I'll give the note to Jeff for safekeeping.
That young hothead.
You got him all wrong, Morgan. He was upset about Lonnie, sure, but he's a top hand, and he knows how to do what he's told.
I've wondered if he bushwhacked me my first night in Los Angeles. Somebody sure did.
It wouldn't have been Jeff.
That boy's no murderer.
You sound like you know him pretty well.
I ought to. He's my nephew. I've known him since he was knee-high.
All right. If you got pen and paper in the house, I'll write out the directions to where we're going. And then we'd better get started.
Sooner the better. Those bastards have hurt one hair on that lady's head.
Don't think about that.
After Frank wrote the note to leave with Jeff, Linderman called the young puncher into the hacienda and handed him the sealed envelope.
What's this?
Never you mind what it is. All you gotta know is that if Morgan and I ain't back here at the ranch by sunup tomorrow, you light a shuck for town and give that envelope to Lawyer Stafford at the Natto Hotel.
You and the gunslinger are going after the Signora.
You just don't worry about where we're going.
Take me with you. I swear, Pete, I'll do whatever you tell me. Just let me come along and help. I got a powerful hankering to shoot some of those drillers.
Dadgummit, just do what I told you. One more thing. You didn't try to ambush Morgan 3 nights ago in town, did you?
What? You mean after Lonnie got himself killed? No. You know I didn't do anything like that, Pete. I just brought Lonnie's body back out here to the ranch.
You believe me now, Morgan?
I believe I do. We're counting on you, son. Don't let that envelope out of your sight, and take it to Mr. Stafford if we don't come back.
All right, Mr. Morgan. I'll do it. But I still wish you and Pete would let me come with you.
They left the big ranch house. The barn roof had collapsed by now, and the walls had fallen in as well. That had made the fire burn larger and brighter for a while, but it was dying down now. The hands continued to throw buckets of water on the rubble. It would smolder for days, Frank knew, an all too vivid reminder of the wanton destruction that had struck at Salida del Sol. Frank was looking forward to settling the score with the men who had done this, but that would have to wait. First, he and Linderman had to rescue Dolores. Once she was safe, then would come the showdown that had been building up for months in the San Fernando Valley. It had taken his arrival to make things blow up, Frank thought, as he swung up into the saddle on Goldie's back. Once again, he asked himself just how that had come about. He was starting to have an inkling, but he would have to find out more information before he could be sure. The two men rode out, taking an extra saddled horse with them, Wolf behind them. Linderman looked back at the big cur.
That brute's got some wolf in him, don't he?
More than likely, but I wouldn't know for sure.
Looks like a fine dog.
Frank had been waiting for the rest of the comment he'd been getting from folks lately about how they didn't like dogs, but that nudged the foreman up a notch in Frank's estimation. As they rode, Frank went ahead and told Linderman where they were going and described the box canyon in the San Gabriels.
That's why I said a whole bunch of men couldn't do this job. They'd be picked off going through that notch leading into the canyon.
I've been around those mountains some, but I don't recall ever seeing a place like that. The forest is so thick over there, you could poke around for days and never find what you were looking for if you didn't know right where it was.
I probably wouldn't have found the place if not for Wolf. He can follow a trail better than any human tracker.
I don't doubt it. You know, Morgan, you're not a bad sort of fella for a gunslinger. It beats me why you go to work for a man like Magnuson. Maybe he's not the one who's behind all the rustling and killing, but he still wants to ruin the valley with his damned oil wells.
He doesn't see it as ruining anything. I think he believes he's actually doing a good thing by pumping that oil out of the ground. Folks can get enough use out of it to make drilling for it worthwhile.
Maybe so, but I sure don't see it. Seems like a waste of time to me. I know he can make money from it, but Lord, what a way to get rich.
I'm afraid we may have to get used to it. If you carry any weight with the Signora, Pete, it might be a good idea to try to convince her to come to an agreement with Magnuson.
Go into business with that skunk? Good Lord, Morgan. I thought a man like you who's lived his whole life in the West would have more sense than that.
You ever try to stand in the middle of a river when it's flooding, Pete?
What? Hell no.
Well, you'd have just about as much luck doing that as you would trying to stand up to time and progress without getting swept away.
Progress.
I know what you mean, amigo. I surely do.
They rode on in silence then. Frank hoped that Linderman would at least give some consideration to what he had said. Once all this ruckus was settled, the conflict at the heart of it would still remain. Each side would have to learn to adjust to the needs of the other, or sooner or later, violence would break out again. Frank estimated it was around midnight by the time the thickly wooded mountains loomed dark and sinister above them. Even though the moon had risen and gave some light, Frank had to take it slow to make sure he and Linderman were headed in the right direction. He soon found the saddle in the ridge that led to the canyon, though, and held up a hand in a signal for Linderman to halt. He reined Goldie in as well, and the two men dismounted.
We'll leave the horses here and go in on foot, like I did this afternoon. Be as quiet about it as you can. They're liable to have extra sentries out tonight, just in case somebody trailed them back here after all the hell they raised.
I know how to be quiet. Don't worry about me.
I'm not worried about you so much as I am about Senora Montero. Her life may be riding on us, Pete.
Don't I know it. Lead the way, Morgan. I'll be right behind you.
Winchesters in hand, the two men started into the canyon. Wolf padded along behind them, and this time Frank didn't make him stay with Goldie. Having the big cur with them might come in handy before the night was over, and Wolf could move as quietly as, or more quietly than any human could. Frank knew he was putting a lot of confidence in Pete Linderman. The ranch foreman was a good man and plenty tough, but he wasn't a professional fighting man. So far, though, Linderman was doing all right, Frank thought, as they crept deeper and deeper into the canyon and were nearing the spot where the sentry had been posted earlier in the day.
Everything all right over there, Chet?
Yeah, quiet as can be.
That confirmed two things for Frank. He was right about where he and Linderman were in the canyon, and the assumption that the gang would have extra guards posted tonight was correct, too. He and Linderman had frozen in their tracks when the first sentry called out. With a man on the other side of the canyon, they couldn't rely on silence alone to get them into the hideout safely, as Frank had earlier in the day. If the man on the far side was watching the canyon floor over here, he might see them slipping along. They would have to use every patch of shadow they could to conceal themselves. Luckily, the moon was low enough in the sky by now so that it wasn't shining directly into the canyon. Frank leaned closer to Linderman and with hand motions communicated to the foreman that he had to follow exactly in his footsteps. Frank knew he could count on Wolf to stay in the shadows. The big cur was like a phantom in the night, unseen and unheard until it was too late for his quarry. Frank suspected that the men posted on the walls of the canyon wouldn't be the only guards. The faint orange wink of a cigarette glowing up ahead told him that he was right. After a few moments, Frank couldn't see the quarry glowing anymore, but he could still smell it. He let that guide him to the guard. Keen eyes finally spotted the man lounging in some scrubby trees that grew along the base of the canyon wall, cupping the cigarette in his hand now to keep it from showing. A shot now would ruin everything. Frank touched Linderman on the arm and then motioned for him to stay put. He slid his Colt from its holster and moved forward inch by inch, taking great care each time he put a foot down. Frank lunged forward and lashed out with the butt of the revolver. The man folded up without making another sound. Frank knelt beside him and checked for a pulse. The one he found was fast and thready and fluttered to a stop after a moment. The fractured skull had been enough to kill the guard. Linderman jumped a little when Frank reached out of the darkness to touch his shoulder, but the foreman didn't make a sound. Barely visible in the murky gloom, even though only inches separated them, Frank pointed out the way he was going, and Linderman followed. The canyon began to widen out again. Frank sensed as much as saw the dimensions growing larger. That meant they were reaching the area where the cabins were and where the rustled cattle were kept until they could be driven out and sold to unscrupulous beef buyers. Frank suspected that Dolores would be kept in one of the cabins, but as he knelt and studied the layout, he saw that he was wrong about that. She was under the overhang of the bulging bluff that formed the rear wall of the canyon, sitting with her back against a rock not far from the fire. Her hands appeared to be tied together in front of her. Three of the hard cases stood near the fire, smoking and passing a bottle back and forth. They had been posted there to keep an eye on Dolores, Frank decided. Her legs weren't tied, so she could get up and run if she took it in her head to do such a thing.
Hey, Senorita! You want some red eye to get you in the mood, huh?
Those bastards!
Take it easy.
But...
it doesn't matter what they say to her. All that's important is that we get her out of here.
How are we gonna do that? That fire's big enough, it lights up that whole area under the bluff. We can't even get close to her without them seeing us.
The fire's far enough back under the overhang that it doesn't shine on the bluff up above.
What good does that do us?
That's the way we'll come down. We'll be on top of those varmints before they know we're there. If we can take care of them without a lot of racket, We can slip the Senora out of here before the rest of the bunch realizes what's going on.
That's crazy. The face of that bluff's too sheer. Nobody could climb down it, and the Senor sure as hell couldn't climb back up.
We'll take her out the front door of this place. If we move fast enough, they won't have a chance to stop us. As for getting down there, I got a good look at that bluff during the day, and it's not as smooth as it looks. There are enough crevices and rough spots that we can find some handholds and footholds.
I reckon it's worth a try. Lord knows we can't just waltz in any other way.
That's right. When all the other routes are blocked, you take whatever path is left.
That don't explain how we're gonna get up there in the first place.
We have to climb up before we get there and work our way around.
Shit, that's gonna take forever.
I don't have anywhere else I have to be right now, do you?
You know damn well that I don't.
I reckon we better get started then. We'll get as close as we can before we head up.
Staying next to the canyon wall, the two men cat-footed their way toward the fire.
Man, I know what I'm gonna do with that little thing when I get a hold of her.
Finally, Frank judged they were close enough to begin their ascent. Any closer, and they ran the risk of being spotted as they climbed. He touched Linderman's shoulder in a signal to halt. They had already discussed how they were going to proceed from there. Linderman carried pigging strings in his pocket, as most cowboys were in the habit of doing, in case they had to bulldog a calf. The two men took their boots off, used the pigging strings to tie each pair together, and slung the boots around their necks. Clambering around on the rocky walls of the canyon would be a lot easier in stocking feet. Then Frank knelt beside Wolf and ruffled the cur's thick coat.
Stay here, boy. Believe me, I'd take you with us if I could, big fella. You'd have to be part mountain goat instead of wolf, though, to go where we're going.
Then Frank reached up, felt around until he found a good handle, and dug the toes of his right foot into a small crevice. He pulled himself up and reached above him to search for another handle. A few feet away, Pete Linderman did the same thing. Frank's fingers and toes began to ache from supporting his weight, and he knew that Linderman had to be going through the same thing. It was so dark, Frank found it difficult to judge how high he was when he looked back over his shoulder. He figured they needed to be at least 20 feet off the ground as they worked their way above the overhang where Dolores was being held prisoner next to the fire. When Frank decided that they had to be high enough, he began angling to his right. That would take him above the cave-like area. The light that spilled out from the fire would be his guide. Linderman followed. One slip, one rock that pulled loose, one wrong move would doom them and Dolores. So far, so good, though. No one had raised an alarm down below, so Frank knew he and Linderman hadn't been seen, and they were almost where they needed to be. He could tell that from the glow given off by the fire. They had come far enough, he decided a moment later. When he had both feet and one hand in secure holds, Frank used the other hand to point downward. Linderman nodded again in understanding. Before they could begin their descent, though, one of the guards, who was now almost directly below them, spoke up.
Here comes that little runt. Wonder what he wants.
Frank twisted his head and saw that the door into one of the cabins had opened. Two figures strode toward the fire. Frank couldn't make out any details at first, but as the men came closer, he saw that one was short, slender, and dressed in a brown tweed suit and derby hat. The other wore the rough range clothes of one of the gunmen. Frank had never seen the dude before. He was sure of that. But it was more important that the dude did not see him now. So far, neither of the newcomers had looked up as they walked toward the guards.
Damn it, Warner, what did I tell you about getting drunk?
Sorry, Mr. Mitchell. We're not drunk, though, I can promise you that. Just taking a little nip every now and then to help us stay awake.
Anyway, you can see for yourself that Mexican bitch ain't gone nowhere. She's right there.
And looking mighty fine, too. And when can we start taking turns getting to know her better, boss?
I told you I'm not the boss, but I speak for him, and he's given firm orders that Senora Montero is not to be harmed unless and until he says so. Is that understood?
Sure. You can't expect a fella not to notice how pretty a woman is, though.
You can notice all you want. Just keep your hands off her.
Fine.
Senora, I apologize for this ordeal you're having to go through. You should have cooperated when Mr. Magnuson first approached you.
So you work for that bastard Magnuson, you little weasel? That doesn't surprise me. I never trusted him. What do you want? Do you want me to sign some sort of agreement with Magnuson that will let him drill for oil on my range?
I'm afraid it's too late for that. You'll have to relinquish all claim to Salida del Sol.
Relinquish all? Tú eres un bastardo. Eres una serpiente que tú arrostras. You're loco. Magnuson's loco. Give him my ranch? Never.
We'll see. Perhaps you'll regard things differently by tomorrow. I'll bid you good night and let you think it over. I warn you, though, Senora, your time is limited.
It doesn't matter how long you give me to think it over. I'll never give up my ranch.
Mitchell turned and walked off, accompanied by the hard case who had brought him out here to talk to Dolores. Neither man looked back.